It's gone by very quickly, hasn't it? Very, very quickly.
I'm doing some comparing to the last retreat, which is so helpful. You know, I worked with this the way it was, but that 3 month stretch, you can go so deep, and that's what I miss. But this time I didn't, I'm not that skillful. I guess I'm the practitioner that I can go so deep and sure not to find.
Well, what we should really focus on this year is when people come to visit, seeing who would like to come and help support the retreat. And then, you know, hopefully, no more building next year. A few years respite. Oh, if Pat and Joe will let us. They wanted to go. Pat wants to go. Boom, boom, boom. I'm building to the next. Okay.
I have a question. I was thinking this week about working with attachment, and I thought about with how I work with anger, try to, is when it arises to use the flash of that, the energy of that, to ask the question, you know, who's getting angry? And then it really goes right away. But if I was having some difficulty with that, trying to apply that to attachment, I think it's because attachment is so much subtler than the big flash of anger. And so the best I could come up with was when I start feel, because attachment is that sticky, sticky stuff. When that starts arising, to try to just keep my mind really kind of still, or
okay. So you're saying when you get a flash of anger, because of the anger energy strong, it's easy to take that energy and say, who is getting angry, but attachment creeps up in a much more subtle way, so it's harder to identify when you're having it. And then you're thinking that maybe an antidote is to try and keep the mind still. It's very true that the thing is with attachment is, well, first of all, when we're angry, there's an unhappy feeling. You know, our feeling aggregate, the accompanying feeling for anger is unhappiness. So we notice that. The accompanying feeling for attachment is happiness. Yeah? Because we're, you know, I mean, when we don't get what we want, then it turns into dissatisfaction and anger and stuff like that. But initially, when we like something and we're attached to it and we want it and we're getting it, because attachment isn't just when we haven't yet gotten what we want. It's when we actually have it. Then the mind feels happy. So the mind doesn't even think there's affliction manifest at that moment. That thought doesn't go there because of the happy feeling. So we're not used to identifying attachment until it gets to the point where it becomes sticky and painful. Okay? But actually, there's been a lot of attachment there before it got to the point of getting sticky and painful. Okay? So it's noticing it when, you know, there's that pleasant feeling and identifying, oh, this is attachment. Yeah, this mind is exaggerating the good qualities of that object or person or situation or whatever it is.
So to figure out the discernment between just the happy mind without going to the grasping, that's the key. That's the That's the ballpark.
Yeah. So figuring out the difference between just a happy state of mind because you're peaceful and calm or loving, and a happy state of mind because there's attachment. Yeah. Yeah. To figure out the difference between those two. Yeah. It's not always so easy. Yeah?
I've been looking at that recently. I find that they're actually, we lump them together very much, like the pleasure and happiness, and like they're the same thing. Like happiness being like peace of mind and like, you know, just like tranquility, or just kind of a gentle sort of mindedness, or love, or compassion, that being happiness, and then, you know, like sense pleasure. And it's like we kind of put them together as like positive. In my experience, it's like it's like the positive, so those are happiness. But when I start looking at them, they're really quite different. I mean, they don't, like, the more I try to draw a line between them, it's not, in experience at the moment, it's hard to kind of separate them.
Mm-hmm.
But when I really look at the texture of my mind, they're very clear.
Mm-hmm.
It's very clear.
Yeah.
It's like oil and water. I mean, there's no difference. Sometimes you shake it up, they look the same.
I was going to comment somewhat the same, that somewhere back away, as you said, to start noticing in your body, like not even just in the body, but feeling in the body.
Mm-hmm.
And this week, again, working with attachment, I was trying to catch it earlier.
Mm.
And that feeling, I think the word I've used for it is excitement, but it's really pre-excitement.
Mm-hmm.
It's before that. But there's kind of a little buzz that starts.
Yeah.
And I have identified that as good. And now, when I'm this quiet enough and my mind's in that more peaceful, gentle place, I go, oh, no, that's ruining my peaceful, gentle place.
Mm-hmm.
But physically, even.
Yeah.
So like a
tingle.
There's no word for it, but there's this buzz that starts.
Yeah.
And then it's like a God have, whatever it is.
Mm-hmm.
And it's all ruined then. I mean, from right there, it doesn't matter if you get it, you don't get it.
Yep.
So fragile, that peaceful, gentle place. You know, you get a retreat for 2 months and kind of feel it a little, and then, you know, the fudge can be
it can be anything.
Mm-hmm.
So
fragile.
The attachment to the fudge can be
Speaking of the fudge, had me laughing at lunch today, because yesterday when I had some of it, I was expecting chocolate, not fudge.
Ah.
And I tasted it, and it was awful, because it didn't meet my expectations. Yeah. I got a little frustrated, and I was like, okay. And I had another one, because I knew what it was. I was like, maybe this one will be better, and of course it wasn't. But then today I had some, and I knew what to expect, and I actually enjoyed it. And I started laughing because I was thinking about the, you know, the motivation you gave about expectations today.
Yeah.
But on another note, I just wanted to really thank you, because I feel like I'm benefiting so much from living at the Abbey and being in the community, and it's been challenging, but my Dharma practice has grown tremendously. I can't imagine ever getting to the place where I feel I'm at now, which is still, of course, not good enough. The first one was to satisfy me before my practice. But anyway, you're now in the enemy category.
You can't imagine it having gotten to the place where it's at.
I can't imagine having had having had my practice arrive at such a deep place without living at the Abbey. I mean, there's no way to do what we do here without this environment and this container. So thank you so much for that. And then the other piece was...
you got to write that and put that on the web. No, seriously, so people see the benefit.
The other piece was, and you touched on it today, was I noticed after last week's teaching, I meditated on it the following morning, and I started seeing where I have this irresistible urge that is resistible, but it's really tingling and exciting to use the Dharma as a telescope instead of as a mirror, and to look at other people's behavior through this looking glass of the Dharma, which I didn't used to have just 2 or 3 years ago. Mm-hmm. And so I used my own, you know, book of ethics and what appropriate behavior was to look at people. But now I have the Dharma, and I'm seeing where I've replaced my book with the long rim and, and, you know, the Buddhist teachings, and how wrong that is. Mm-hmm. And I just appreciate the teaching tonight because it's helping me see it even more. As I throw it on the floor, even more clearly. So thank you so much.
I mean, it does help to look at other people's lives through the eyes of the Dharma, but not with judgment. Yeah, that's the key.
I continue to work on the judgment in my mind, and I what seemed to help and work a bit is that I decided that it would be impossible to transform oneself into a Buddha without seeing all the others as Buddhas or the potential to be Buddhas.
Mm-hmm.
And so I just, whenever a judgment comes up, I'll just say that's a Buddha.
Mm-hmm.
And it's been very humble.
Mm-hmm.
My judgment's gone down quite a bit. So,
yeah, potential Buddha.
Mm-hmm.
That's a potential Buddha.
It was nice just to make the transition back into the hall today. And maybe a little bit in contrast to Diane, it's like it's not that level of depth, but it's nice to be able to be fairly engaged in offering service and then to go back into the hall and feel like you kind of can click in, just, I mean, not that the things, you know, but to be there is inspiring in a sense. And even working some of the in between sessions, but it was encouraging to just feel like to be able to be there and to make determination to use this last bit of time as important times for reflection.
Yeah.
And so the numbers in the hall really help keep more cohesive.
Mm-hmm.
Just having more people. Did you find that today, having more people in the hall was more?
Yeah.
It just.
Oh, yeah.
Although Diane and I do okay. Yeah, we have a second
room. Very good.
Well, yeah. We can lie down. Yeah. But it does feel a little spacious.
Yeah.
Well, I've been using my continuing mini retreat upstairs in my room to. You had asked us, and I can't remember whether it was the beginning of this set of teachings or the end of Essence of Refined Gold, but you said to look at the 10 non-virtuous actions over the course of our lives and see which ones were, you know, threat that ran through long periods of time.
Mm-hmm.
So this past week I've really done a nice review of that. Mm-hmm. And I'm looking at it a little bit more with some distance and perspective. Because I tend, one of my basic traits is to overestimate other people's bad qualities and to underestimate my own. and I'm not beating myself up and being self-denigrating. And so I was able to look at, there were some things that came up in my life, particularly when I was in my 20s and 30s, some pretty unethical, dangerous behavior. And my relationships to some members of my family, some grudge holding and some hard feelings that I've been holding for decades. That from your teaching today, also the unrealistic expectations of, around, particularly my twin brother, and how I wanted him to be, you know, the twin that everybody said twins should be, and the fact that he never has been and may never be, and to work through how expectations of him has colored a lot of my expectations of others, and I can see that common thread on how it sets me up for a lot of resentment and disappointment and pushing on people because I really want them to be other than who they are. And so that was a very powerful, and it happened last year in July when I was at His Holiness was teaching, so I had that conversation with him that told him how I had been relating to him and that I apologized and told him that I really do love him for who he is and to just continue to be Brian. And how he actually said, you know, I'm really sorry that I haven't been the brother that I know that I really want to be, but I can't. So there was a real healing place for me fessing up to the expectations, and then him also saying that even through his own heart he felt that he had fallen short in some way. So we kind of had this meeting. But I've done that a lot with most people in my life, that with expectations that just push me away from people. And so really making a commitment to look at people more realistically and to look at myself more realistically. I mean, the sickness has really put me in touch with how I set myself up. And that the low level of anxiety that I've experienced in my life is due to these very unrealistic expectations. Even about, you know, how I'm dealing with the sickness. When am I going to get better? It's like this, and I can see the anxiety when the days start clicking away, and I'm like, you're not better yet. And it's just anxiety starts to grow. It's like, what is this about? No, you don't have any determination. You're doing the best you can. Just drop it. You know, the anxiety is not helping the healing process. But how I, you know, how I set those things up in my own mind. So it's been very helpful to just have to sit and lay in bed and watch it. You know, watch the distraction, watch the expectations, watch the anxiety, and then go through the emptiness meditation and then the meditation of compassion. It's been very fruitful. Incredibly fruitful. Well, I would have had the same fruitfulness in the meditation, would have been a different fruitfulness, but this has been just a very remarkable month. And there's more to come.
Yeah. How are you doing? Come on!
I had the wrong expectations about this week. I didn't understand the instruction. I thought we were all going to be in the hall. And so I was pretty disappointed still to have, like, I don't know, I just questions during study time and questions during other times about, you know, all the building stuff and this and that. So I realized that I need just to let people know that I had this expectation that we would all be in the hall and that I would have this one week that was just like free of all of this.
Yeah.
And I was pretty disappointed and just sad because I would like it to be the place where we can have everyone in retreat and not be doing all these other things. And so I'm just trying to get myself out of this funk about that, so because it's stupid.
So you felt badly that not everybody was in the hall, or were other people asking you building questions when you wanted to just do retreat?
Both.
Okay, so people just...
So I let people know.
Yeah, don't...
The problem is that there's no, you know, like, I figured these things out after the fact. I thought we were all going to be in there like we are on Sundays, because that's how I understood the instruction, but that's not really the reality.
And that was the aim?
Right.
And then everybody makes their own decision.
Right, yeah, and I realized that later, but I didn't quite quite go into the day with that. And so it was just like, oh, okay, this is what we're doing.
Yeah.
Okay.
But nobody asked her anything about the building. Leave her alone until next week. And let John Pell do that, the thing with Geshe-la's disciples, and that can also wait a week too. It doesn't have to be done tomorrow. So just leave it.
Yeah. I think it's been, dumb that I let my mind go in these holes, basically. That's where I'm at. And as soon as I said things to people, of course understood. I just didn't.
What did you say?
Well, I just don't give me messages, direct these things to John Pell, and I asked John Pell, and everyone's fine and great. Everybody else is fine. But people know, hey, this is my plan for this week. The problem is I've been in and out so much that nobody knows what the heck I'm doing.
Right.
So then when I'm just like, oh, I thought we were all in. And then all of a sudden, oh, no, we aren't all in.
Yeah. And when I left you that message, too, about the people in Las Vegas, it was like, it doesn't need to be done this week. It was thinking about it and not giving it to you for a long time.
So anyway, that's kind of where I'm at. And I think everybody has been great. I'm just like, don't know why I bothered to stay in these bad moods.
What does everybody think? Why does she stay in the bad mood?
Natural.
It's not natural.
You said today it's natural. It's essentially been, it's not good. It's not what we want to do, but it's supposed to.
Grasping at ideas. Making ideas fixed. Like, okay, it's written, so nobody should talk, and then you hear people talking, Maribor does retreat, nobody goes to Maribor. Then you can go, instead of grasping at fixed ideas, making ideas fixed.
For me, I find that I really enjoy, not really, but it seems like I enjoy being in the bathroom when I'm in it, that there's some comfort and familiarity in the bathroom, and so I hang out there far longer than I need to.
Part that I get sometimes concerned about with you, is that, for whatever reason, you find yourself in these places, and I can almost sense how hard you are on yourself by the fact that you are there. Mm-hmm. And it's even more painful to see the suffering of what you do to yourself when you find yourself in that place, rather than being in that place itself. And I've seen in the past, movies because of just the role that the responsibility that you've had. I have felt that level of mental suffering in you about your relationship to yourself more palpably this past year than I've ever felt it in the past few years. And I have been very, very concerned about you. And it's not about you having...
Weep now. I find myself just weeping sometimes. It's crazy.
But there's nothing about you. You just terrorize yourself when you fall into these places. And I think that's what keeps you there longer there. I just worry about you more this year than I have before.
My practice is much better than it's been in a year or more. Actually, better for my whole life. Because I'm learning how to do things that I could never do before. Like for the last longest time, I feel like I would see things and I couldn't work with them. I still fall in these holes, but I have to say, all in all, I feel like I'm finally learning how to use the Dharma to work with my mind, whereas before, there's certain things that come easy, but the things that have been hard for me the last year, I've learned how to work with better. And I actually think, I was listening to Bhikkhu Bodhi, and he was like, I figured this out just by trial and error with a little bit of reading, but then he just laid it out straight. that about working with doubt and how you do it. And it's like, wow, that's just what I finally kind of came to. Well, he just explained that there's two kinds of doubt.
Mm-hmm.
And I feel like the tools are being developed now. Mm-hmm. That's why I think it's so, I get so pissed off, basically, when I sabotage it by just getting in this. And I know what you're saying there, because, I mean, I have learned, and I was just telling Venerable this, but, you know, because there's a part of me when it gets happy, it's gotten so shot down here, because it's the kind of happiness that, I don't know, it happened when I was a kid, too. Like, the day it was my birthday, and I was really happy about something. My dad clobbered me with a board, because I'm not supposed to be doing acting like that, you know, and it's the same kind of feeling, a certain kind of, like, bouncy excitement that doesn't fit, you know, and so I went through this long period of living here, which really, I think it's kind of some kind of discouragement that I haven't really had in the same length before in my life. But there was a part of that that functioned to make my mind more sober, which was useful, because it wasn't so up and down. So now I feel like I don't feel like that kind of long-lasting discouragement happening. But I feel like it's helpful, the meditations that I'm doing and the way I'm thinking about things, to keep my mind, you know, from, I don't know, just being caught in things so much. I haven't got it worked out. I mean, I find myself, I pull away way too much inside, you know, because I'm having anger. Whereas what I want to just be is, like, peaceful, you know, like the whole thing about attachment to friends. I kind of decided that because my family was so chaotic that for me, one of my biggest attachments besides ideas is friends, because I didn't have, like, a family that was very supportive. Was not something that I learned in my home. I learned that in my friendships and then later in life. And so now this thing of being attached to friends is kind of something I kind of work up on a daily basis now, trying to not hang out in that place. But I don't have it yet. It still goes to anger and just closing doors rather than just creating virtue and seeing the kindness of other people. You know, but I feel like I'm kind of working in the right place.
Mm-hmm. Well, maybe it's just that I just sense, I know that there's things that you're understanding about yourself. I can see the level of your practice has transformed so much of what was hidden from you previously. But what I pick up sometimes is perhaps just, like when you're saying, this is really done, sort of an impatience with yourself. And I know it all too well, and that's probably why I'm honing in on it a little bit, is that you're finding the things that you need to work with and working with them, but I said sometimes you're impatient with, like, all right already. And that's the part that...
What do you do with that?
Well, I've been saying the past month, compassion is absolutely the answer.
Yeah. You have to be very accepting of yourself and very kind and compassionate to yourself. Instead of, you know, I'm so stupid because I'm hanging onto this anger. Mm-hmm. Just like, oh, wow, you know.
You know, I don't think something was said here recently, and I realized I have never really had this model too much.
You never what?
I have not had this model very much.
Uh-huh.
People say be gentle, be mm-hmm. this, be that, but I have to say it's not something that, I mean, I tend to learn a lot of things by watching
mm-hmm.
people, and then not necessarily judging so much, but just watching
mm-hmm.
and realizing, okay, I want to do that, and I don't want to do that, you know, because this, you know, I've been working out for myself, but I don't have a lot of good modeling for this.
Mm-hmm.
But
you have gentleness inside.
Yeah, I do.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm quite aware of that.
Yeah.
But I don't know how to access it sometimes when I need it, I guess. You can't, like, it's just, I mean, it really, it's so harsh sometimes. I mean, I'm so aware sometimes, like I'll be in this certain, you know, happy kind of mood, and I'll just try to, I mean, this is what's been good about this retreat, is I actually found a method mean, I'm like starting to turn the lamas open in the sense of I'm like three quarters of the time my motivation
good.
It's been really good for me.
Good.
I kind of need to hit it from a lot of different angles. And one of them that's realized from this experimentation is trying to flavor my mind with something positive. And there's so many ways you can do that. There's mm-hmm. so many choices of what you can take that are virtuous and just try to flavor. But when I'm in a really crappy mood and I'm putting myself through these same paces, it's really hard to find it. And I just know that I need to do that. But it's like I can't find them because I usually try to do this spontaneously. Like, what is it I want to flavor this meditation with? You know, and it's really quite joyful because it's like, okay, this one's going to be this one and this one's going to be that one. And you just try to hold it through the thing and come back to it. And it's been really quite inspiring and good. But then I have to have a different mode on this.
But that is, at least what I did, was just name it.
Mm-hmm.
Just name what's going, I am so pissed off. Because mm-hmm. then you have somebody acknowledging and witnessing, and then you're not alone. Because mm-hmm. when I had that mind, when I would stay in that place, I felt so separate.
Oh, yeah, that's why that's what drives me crazy about it.
So,
like I separate myself.
So, yeah, so name it. Mm-hmm. Then you accept it.
Maybe
then you can turn it.
What do you call it?
I'm pissed off. I'm in a lousy mood. I don't even know why. You just start finding the words. You just find the words. Doesn't matter what it, and in this place, who's going to judge that? Because we see it, at least feel it anyhow.
Mm-hmm.
Like I knew already today there was this day. I didn't have any idea what it was, but I knew that it was, like you say, suffering. So you could just even put a note up when you're in silence.
Watch out.
That'll bring people to you.
Yeah, it would be 180 degrees what I want to do, so it's probably what I need.
About not having models, you know, Manju, wherever he is. I thought Manju, after he had his leg amputated, I mean, that was like so strong in me, because the way he modeled it, I've never seen a human being do it. I mean, he was like in misery, and he didn't know what happened to him, and it hurt, and you could tell he felt insecure. But he just, you know, got up and hobbled around, and, you know, he curled in my lap a lot, but he just got up and went up and down the stairs and did things, and, you know, and it just really struck me, because any human who lost their leg would go, oh, I lost my leg, I'm damaged, nobody's going to love me, I don't love myself, I'm useless, what's going to happen in my life, I've lost my job, I can't make a living, everybody's going to hate me, I'm so ugly. And I just thought, you know, Manju didn't do any of that to himself. He just said, oh, different. Okay, let's find another way to get up and down those stairs. And then he did it.
Thank goodness for his tail.
Yeah.
I noticed that when I'm in a crappy, when something is afflicting me a lot, not in the moment usually, but afterward when I'm a little bit more stable mind, I spend a lot of time thinking of the positive aspect of having those afflictions, in that I'm going to learn to deal with those afflictions very well. Like, Like, I don't tend to be very angry, so most likely you're going to be better equipped to deal with anger than I am. But then again, I tend to be very lazy, so I might be very equipped to deal with laziness more than you. So at some point, anger is going to come up in me, and at some point, laziness is going to come up in you. But, you know, seeing the positive side of, you know, like, and sometimes I look at other people when they're afflicted with some really, you know, something very difficult, and I think of like, hey, you know, they're going to learn to deal with that really well, and one day that's going to be really helpful, because, you know, I can start thinking of situations, oh, you know, someday they might have to deal with someone who's really, really aggressive, and, you know, right now they're dealing with all this anger, and they're going to learn to deal with that, and they're going to approach the situation and just really be able to shine through it, and in a way that I probably won't, and, you know, so I think of it in a way that, like, you know, almost like, I hope that I have the opportunity to have those things come up so that I can really learn to deal with it also. Mm-hmm. And I don't do that in the moment when any sort of affliction, but when there's like, I don't know, the calm mind, I try to think of, you know, that's...
Yeah, we use it kind of as aspirations sometimes. Mm-hmm. Make aspirations to get a little
help. And that's where the part that the Dharma becomes so enlivened in us, because we're talking, we talk to anybody about it, it's totally from our direct experience. Mm-hmm. You know, and it just so empowers us.
I guess what I want to share, Kirk, is that I feel very affected by when you have this kind of thing, like today, and then last week there was a day where in the hall you had a really hard time. And, it was in your motivation before. And it's because I have my own little self-centered reaction, but I can't think of how to help, and I would like to, and it feels like you do think you go away, you know, like you pull away, but you haven't gone anywhere, you're here with us. Mm-hmm. And we all know something's going on, you just don't know what it is. So there isn't any away to go to. I guess I would like you to know that you haven't gone away. And there's no away, because we're all just right here. And we're still with you. So I think what Diane's suggesting would be helpful, just to claim it, name it, and say. And you do when people finally ask, but there's something about you doing that without us asking that I think would be good. You know, I mean, I know if I've gone in and checked with you once in a while and said, suffer something, and then you're very forthcoming and very clear, but it might be helpful to just step out, you know, when it feels like not stepping out at all. So, just to let you know.
Something younger. I don't know
about that one. If you feel it, then it's true. Mm-hmm. There's no way to go to. I see what you're saying.
Yeah.
Does it happen when you're in a crappy mood and you're just happy, just eventually at random times have the opportunity or are forced to kind of step up and talk about it and work through a really crappy feeling? Because it seems like you definitely turn inward, like you said, and kind of push away. And then the tendency is not to engage with people. So I'm just wondering if that's an avenue that's just not explored, that the possibility that maybe actually engaging with people might actually be a way to remove yourself, maybe not necessarily, you know, the antidote, but a way to change the situation.
I don't see the most, actually, that I'm aware of is Kevin. Because he doesn't judge me. He just accepts me.
Completely. How do you know that? What did he do?
We're just like that. Same old, same old. Just whether I'm happy or whether I'm sad. It's like, same old, same old.
So you try to pull them aside and say, look, I'm, you know, I'm talking to for a second, just like this, you know, just listen to me and just then give it that. Because that might be, I mean, sometimes I know I just need to put stuff out there and have somebody hear it.
Yeah. That's good. A little note, you know. We didn't engage in a way, but it was the way that I understood, and you know, I was kind of just, I mean, I was just saying, I didn't know what the reaction was at first or whatever, you know, and well, as I was walking over to them. I walked over to thinking that John Bell was at the time, and my way of processing is, I'm just going to self-talk, if I'm just laughing about it, I'm just going, walking over there, if anyone saw me, I thought it was crazy, walking over there, wow, what's going on, I'm a serpent, but I completely understood, you know, in that sense, so,
my inclination is just to go into the retreat cabin and deal with any of them. I don't think that's the solution. I think that I would probably have to get to a place where I don't feel judged.
When do you get to that place?
To not feel judged. Well, actually, when my mind gets clearer, I can just realize that it's all completely fabricated. Like everything that's going on, I'm just fabricating this. That's how I feel about it. It's like, oh, why can't you do this? It's just a fabrication. It's your own thinking that you're reacting to. Everything else that you're seeing outside of you, it's like you've just colored it.
But there's something wonderful about asking a person if they're judging and then they say no, or whatever they say, it's a little worker.
For me, it's finding somebody like Kevin or somebody that I feel doesn't judge me and just using them. And then suddenly, I was actually talking about this with Christina, that the reason my, I think, community is helping so much is actually because I can talk to Venerable and never, ever, ever feel judged. And therefore I can say anything and everything, no matter what. And there's, you know, there's an assessment of where I am or my mind or anything, but me as a person isn't defined by any of that, no matter what. So then it's like, all of a sudden, I've noticed, like, after I talk to you about something very important or intense, whatever was like inside, like a secret or something that I want to keep in, it, like, it doesn't matter anymore. Like, I don't mind telling people, and it doesn't, it's the non-issue to talk about it with somebody else. It's like, so what? You know, well, she didn't judge me, so, you know.
But I think it's very important too, is that, and this is a propensity of mine too, is that I'm assuming people are judging me.
Mm-hmm.
But
yeah.
In fact, I'm responding to my own thoughts,
right,
that are saying
that
people are judging me.
Right, I'm aware of that.
You know, that's one of the qualities.
Get out of it.
Yeah, mm-hmm. One of the qualities in this community, and Diane said it to me, a week and a half ago when I was struggling with my emotions, she said, Sense K, always remember I used it. She said, there are no enemies here. Everyone in this community, remember that there's not one enemy in this community. And that just opens up, because a lot of it is projection from my side. When I'm in a crappy mood and I'm upset, there isn't a kind heart in this room. And it's, what, as you said, it's all fabrication. I mean, Kevin may, because he's got that wonderful way about him, but how do you know where the judgments come from? What's your basis of information if you don't actually approach somebody and say, I'm picking up something, can we talk? So I know my own side that I make up a lot of what I think are qualities in people that don't exist. They're coming from my own thoughts because of where I am. And I've always been able to call you and be honest with you. And that's something that I know I need to be careful of. But you know, when you stand away from it, you can see how what the crazy thinking. But when you're in the middle of your stuff, it's so real.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So then, why would I be any different from anyone else? Why would anyone else not put up notes?
Well, it would be a big thing if I did. I mean, I'm just coming out of this intense week of actually like crashing into myself, and if I am. For a second, put up a note and said, I am feeling unloved, I hate myself, I think I should leave because I don't deserve to be here. Mm. Do I think the whole world would have come to my aid? Well, I didn't then, but now I do. So maybe we should just put up notes. It's not a bad idea.
Mm-hmm. Like a little moon ring.
But you have your smiley face, you know, at our table, you know.
Yeah, grumpy face and smiley face.
Yeah,
right.
And
they
can change at any time.
Well, also the answer to your question is everybody's at different levels. I mean, that's the beauty of community. Not that, you know, anyone is, you know, better than anybody else. It's just that we're different levels. And so, you know, what you can do, I can't, but I can learn from you. Maybe what I can do, you can't, you can learn from me. And that's true with all of us here. So good. I mean, your confidence in dealing with and holding all the information that you hold, you know, I'm amazed and astounded at that. I don't know how you do that. You know, I would like to do that. I watch that. Everybody has their shine.
Trevor, then will give me an assignment yesterday or something I could do that I'm going to do in the next 3 days when I'm in the tree is to make an effigy of the that screaming self-centered person and I'm hating so much when I'm in that space and put it in the dining room so everybody can see. And I'm quite excited to actually do this. If you're up for also making an effigy of
Because I've done this in this one practice I do where you imagine making offerings to spirits. And I would take these parts of myself and imagine them, but like what they would look like if they were living beings. Yeah, and then make offerings to them. And it was so much fun and it was extremely helpful.
Yeah, I'm very excited.
You know? I mean, I had little Miss Self-Pity. Oh, she was so cute. She had this little lacy hat on her, you know, like these old-fashioned things. She had that, and just, you know, because I have this tendency to self-pity, and you know, and her little pink carnations, and she was kind of the shape of a blob because she couldn't do anything for herself, just looking. And, you know, really getting into it, it was really very, lots of fun.
So did you draw it?
I could visualize it in my mind.
Yeah.
And then there's this practice you do where you imagine offering your body to the spirits. So she was one of the spirits. So I changed my body into blissful wisdom nectar and then gave it to her and it satisfied all of her needs. You know. And then there was, you know, kind of the ferocious, angry monster who looked quite a bit different, you know, who had fire and, you know, and noisy and everything, but really.
Is that connected to, like, Chipcraft and Black Fiend demons?
It's kind of like that, yeah. It's kind of that same idea.
There's still that thing of naming.
Mm-hmm. To me, especially like visualizing it, it was like it made me able to also laugh at it.
Yeah.
Because, I mean, like little Miss Self-Pity, I just really embellished her. Yeah? And it was so, it was great.
They are caricatures.
Yeah, they are. Very much.
And the fact that they're no longer you. Mm-hmm. When we hold them, they're us. Like when I'm in the room, that's me.
Yeah.
So there's no space.
Put it out there. There's a therapy technique called narrative therapy where you actually do that. You have the person, like somebody is always the responsible one. So you have them think about that they move where they usually sit, and now responsible one is there. And I ask responsible one questions. They answer, but I'm directing my attention to the empty chair. You know, when did you come onto the scene? How do you help her, all these things, and it transforms that part of, you know, because you can get some distance from it, and you can see where it came from. Always comes from when you're a little kid, and you know you had to, you didn't get what you needed, or you know you had to, hold the lock or whatever, and so it's just it's very helpful to think about you from my goal. It's
not the slave mastery anymore. Well, anyway, Christine is helping me find clay and flour to play. I'm happy to play with you.
Because it would have been nice to have an opportunity to feel the also
happening happening, but I didn't know that was. I thought you were,
well,
we all
predict,
but it's a
that doesn't matter. But,
yeah, I didn't know you were feeling all that.
Of course,
we're
in silence, too, so.
Right, but I don't kind of broadcast those things.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Which is,
I think, by putting the dining room table would be really good for me.
Mm-hmm. Look at that. Because you think you don't broadcast it, but everybody knows.
Well, of course, but I don't say, oh, I mean, like, sharp, I'm not, put up a note saying I'm feeling terrible. I hate myself for feeling terrible. I hate myself for every minute of this. So, I'm not going to tell you.
But you don't have to.
But I'm not going to tell you. And so that also makes me hate it worse, because now you all know, and what do you think? Like that. But the other thing that I think that about this thing about putting it on the table is that I realized this week is that this part, this particular thing I have spent my whole life managing and running from, so I don't actually know it. It has run me, but I'm not very familiar with it because my action has been pat down, shoot it, and dress it up, take it out, but don't look at it. Don't spend any time with it. So.
It's interesting that Chinna is when you first said kind of what your experience has been the last week. Any frustration, any icy heartedness that I have towards you melted. So I think there's some goodness.
What'd you say? Then we can't have anything against them because we all know what it feels like.
The elephant in the room that we all try to deny. And it's like you acknowledge it, it's like, oh yeah, okay. So there it is. So what's the problem?
And in Kendall Klaus' book, Wake Up to Your Life, one of the things he talks about is just exactly what you said so well there is what we don't know about ourselves and don't manage ourselves, that's what other people experience. They're experiencing it. We're not, And the minute we get it, like Diane talked about, know it, and it just goes. And then they're not being so bumped around by it or whatever. Mm. But it's the places we don't know, so we don't know them. Mm.
shadow.
Yeah, and you know, the challenge and the beauty of being here is that all the other ways that, at least for me, all the ways I've managed it are gone.
Are running.
Are gone. Finally, this just ran out of running space.
Yeah.
Gone.
Yeah.
So, it's not very pretty, but.
It's not
Yeah, it's absolutely necessary. It's absolutely necessary. And it also, you know, the other piece for me is really making me think, if, you know, what can I bring to create a loving environment where I or anybody who's in this kind of space can really feel safe to be it, and just, you know, where what can I bring to that? Because I know that's our intention, is to create the safety so that we can all do what we have to do and mm-hmm. be held.
Mm-hmm.
Even articulating that as stating the intention helps.
Mm-hmm. Well, it's also different too, I think, you know, being in the retreat kind of space, you know, I think our community meetings offer that. So we're retreating, we're in a different kind of mm-hmm. mode with each other, that there's not the same kind of avenue. And in a really good way, I think we do a really good job in processing that. And so, you know, with that being a little different than the Thursday night not being quite the same way, I think we've all come here with that sense that we try and really put that out there where we wouldn't otherwise put it out there, you know, or at least test the waters and try it. So in some ways, for me, it's a testimony to how that works. And just retreats a different mode, and how we do that, and how we handle it, how, you know, what I can hold in that space of being more quiet, where I need to go and take that to somebody in whatever way when I want to go. I think about it a little bit longer than I might outside of it. It's just a little different dynamic to, you know, my experience of mm-hmm. retreat time.
We dedicate. Dear to this merit may we send, attain the enlightened state of Manjushri, that we may be able to liberate all sentient beings from their suffering. May that precious Bodhi mind not yet born arise and grow. May that born have no decline, but increase for